Welcome to Education Suspended, a podcast focused on exploring, engaging, and dialoguing with those in education who are passionate about changing the status quo and evolving the archaic system we have inherited. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Education Suspended. We are kicking off season four, which is just nuts to think about that we have come this far. It's really thanks to all y'all that listen. I think the last time I checked as we were getting ready to release this episode is that we were a little over 22,000 listens, which just shows there's a bunch of people out there that really want to see this system change. So thanks for listening. It means a lot. I do want to also thank you all for your patience with the long summer break. Really, that was twofold. The first reason being I needed a break. I do a lot of stuff. Sometimes I don't realize how much I do, even though my wife constantly tells me. And so it just felt good to do nothing over the summer. I just spent a lot of time with my family. We started recording some episodes to get ready for season four. So thank you for your patience. The second reason is that we are starting another internship, but with a new high school. So this year we are with Lindbergh Senior High School in Washington. And just like last year, we're going to have some great high school students being our student interns and doing all the editing. So we decided to pivot to a longer break just to align with their school schedule, which also means that season three was really short. So some of you also picked up on that. So it's a really good season, but it's definitely the shortest one we've had yet. Moving forward, we will stick to the school schedule since we have such great partnerships with high schools now. But let's talk about today's first episode of season four. I guess I should say, I'm actually not sure how to introduce this episode because when I started this podcast, there were a few people that I knew I wanted to talk to. And the Okie Dokie Brothers were definitely one of them. So some of you might not know the Okie Dokie Brothers, but if you have heard me speak or teach, you know that I talk about them quite a bit. I think it's safe to say that I love them more than my three-year-old daughter, which I'm okay with. We actually finally saw them live this summer in Minnesota. And I'm pretty sure there were a few parents just looking at me being like, who's this lady? Because I danced the whole time. So if you don't know, you will know now how wonderful they are. They are the Okie Dokie Brothers. They're a kids band with amazing music and amazing messages. And it's a band that I have loved for a long time. And they came on the podcast, which was just the coolest thing. I tried not to be too starstruck. Hopefully I did okay. And so in this interview, we talked to Joe Maylander, who's one of the two brothers, and just the story of kind of their creation of a band, but more importantly, their connection with education, how they're using music, their belief in the power of nature. And my favorite part, which we're going to focus quite a bit on in this episode in particular, is we realize that we've been conditioned to learn a specific way. And even in some of our other episodes thus far, we have this theme of, do we really know how to be learners? And at one point, Joe talks about, you know, the power and the process of emptying out, of unlearning in an attempt to begin how to learn again, and being in the moment of slowness and being with yourself and understanding that sometimes yourself is the greatest educator that you're going to have, and it's okay. And we should prioritize listening to that voice within all the students. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. It was so amazing to meet Joe of the Okie Dokie Brothers, and we're grateful for his time because he was interviewing with us when their new album was coming out. So again, welcome back to season four of Education Suspended. So sit back and enjoy our conversation with Joe Maylander of the Okie Dokie Brothers.
There's Joe.
How's it going, guys?
Good.
It's so nice to meet you. Oh, I have to be honest, I'm trying not to be too starstruck because I love your music. And thanks. I feel like it brings out the kid in me. And so I'll do my best not to fumble over my words and make a putt, not be a putz. So,
well, thanks for having us, or me. This is good. I appreciate you guys taking the time and spreading the word too.
Well, let's do it. Joe, we do start all of our episodes the same. We'll have you introduce yourselves to our listeners, talk about what you do, how you got there, And our favorite part is, if you wouldn't mind reflecting on your own experience as a student, what was school like for you? And are there any connections to kind of the work that you do now? And then we'll just go from there.
You know, okay. I want to already say that I can already tell that if I had Joe in class, I would have my right eye on him most of the time.
I'll tell you some stories of that.
Tell me if I'm not right, Joe.
Yeah, it depends on the day. Some days I was pretty well behaved and focused. Other days I was looking for a way to always just kind of stir the pot.
Okay.
I love it. Well, let's stir the pot. We'll hand it off to you, and you just let us know if you have questions, and we'll get up and running.
All right. So I'm Joe Maylander, and I'm from the band the Okie Dokie Brothers. I play guitar and write songs in that duo with my best friend since we were three, Justin Lansing, who plays banjo in the group. And as the Okie Dokie Brothers, we write songs for families about the great outdoors and about getting creative as a family by taking adventures, whether that's just a walk to the park or camping trips. And we do that by taking adventures ourselves. So we started off doing these adventure albums where we'd canoe down the Mississippi River and write songs, or hike the Appalachian Trail, or horseback on the Continental Divide. We take 30-day camping trips while writing songs and making an album. And these albums would also come with little movies that were kind of like documentaries about our creative process, our friendship, how we would find inspiration by observing little things in the natural world. Yeah, and the feelings that that evoked. So that's kind of how we started. We also play a lot of schools where we'll play either at a school for kind of an assembly, or we'll play a performing arts center on during the weekends. But then on like a Friday or a Monday on tour, they will kind of have buses, bus kids in for a field trip of sorts to a theater, and we get to play for kids that way. And then sometimes we do workshops with those schools about songwriting and inspiration. So that's just a general sense of what we do as the Okie Dokie Brothers. We can get into more of those things later. But as for my own story with education, I grew up in Denver, Colorado with Justin. We actually met at our little preschool when we were 3 and 4 years old. It was actually a Catholic school we went to. And I wouldn't say it was like a traditional Catholic school, you know, stereotypical thing that people might imagine with the nuns and the rulers and all that. I think we were past that time, but it was, you know, somewhat of a traditional education model and, you know, tests and quizzes and all of that kind of stuff. The most important thing about that experience growing up, going K-8 and then on to a Catholic high school, Jesuit high school, and then even a Benedictine University, St. John's, Central Minnesota. Each instance, the positive part of it that I can reflect on is community. And I always did have a sense of belonging and interconnection with the people that I went to school with, whether that was the other kids or just keeping track of brothers and sisters and knowing families. That was a big deal for me and my formation as a human being. And it still plays into what I do today and what Justin and I do as the Okie Dokie Brothers, because a lot of times we don't even think we're in the music business. Really what we are is we're creating little groups and communities that believe in, you know, showing up for your family and spending time in nature. And when you find that community to plug into, you don't have to generate a fan base, really. You know, it's just community, and that's what feels good at shows, and that's what feels good about the way when we put out albums. We know that these people that support us and that we support by showing up in their lives are there for each other. So it doesn't feel as much like a business endeavor for us. It's just about being involved with real people. And I think I got that from growing up in a tight-knit community. So
one thing that comes I think, pretty clear through your music, and I don't know if you'd feel the same way, is that there's this underlying current of the power of being curious, right? The power of exploring the world around you. And I'm wondering, just being curious myself about your story as a student and the sense of community, where did that curiosity come from? What is that connection for you?
Well, my mom was a teacher at the school, but the curiosity came from, well, my parents' belief too, that there isn't necessarily a right answer to things. My dad would always ask me at the end of the day, did you ask any good questions? And I think there was a general understanding that questions and wondering about things were, I mean, that was just as important as figuring out the solutions, if not more. And so I always was encouraged to explore things. Part of our real education came from being out in the woods and the mountains in Colorado. We took a lot of camping trips as kids, and that's how Justin and I created some of our core memories. It's just exploring the neighborhood or taking those trips and sitting around the campfire, summer camps. And I would say that a lot of what we draw on today still comes from those moments of slowness and nature exploration.
Yeah, well, I think I asked because I don't want to assume, but it sounds like you had a fairly decent and stable community around you, right? And so one of the things that Grainer and I talk about quite a bit is just helping others understand that curiosity is really a privilege, right? We all don't grow up in environments that promote and pave a way that you can just show up in your world, show up at your school and be curious. And so for me, one of the things that I really enjoy about what you do as the Okie Dokie Brothers is that it seems like you're trying, I don't even know if it's intentionally, but trying to teach that skill to kids that might not know that that's something that they can also have, right? That is something that they can mm-hmm. gain. So that's kind
yeah.
of what's coming
well,
up for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. And part of that curiosity just comes about if you're in a situation that promotes play, because we're inherently playful creatures and curious creatures. And one thing I will say is that I did have the freedom to play as a kid in the backyard, at school. There were times to, you know, express creatively like that. And when you get into that mindset of creating your own rules for something or making up a little yeah. word game, or Justin and I would always like rewrite songs, take like a standard song and just insert new lyrics for it, some maybe more appropriate than others. Those were just ways of being playful. And I think, yeah, you kind of do start to foster a sense of curiosity of like, oh, how could I turn this on its head, or what could I do? And yeah, maybe some of this was mischievous in some regards, you know, Catholic school, you got to entertain yourself a little bit sometimes. So what's the best way to walk that line so the teacher doesn't send you to the office, but you get a little chuckle out of the rest of your classmates? You know, that's something that kept me curious.
I want to bounce off of that to the word intergenerational. You brought it up right away. And my teaching background, I think it's sorely missed. We don't do enough intergenerationally in our education system. And I wonder if you could give us personal examples of the power of, you know, intergenerational belonging. And maybe you've seen it at play in some of the schools you've been a part of.
Well, like, for instance, I think one of the first memories that comes to mind on the intergenerational learning is the little summer camp I went to up in the Rockies. We had this older, I think she was a grandma at the time, come by the song circles and the fire ring at night, and we would sit around and sing campfire songs, and she knew all the old standards, old folk songs and John Denver songs, and we were the teenagers at the time that, well, I knew her since I was a little kid. I heard her at camp as a camper, but then as a teenager, when Justin and I were counselors, she would still be hanging around, and we learned so much from her way of playing. And she introduced us to that old folk music. And then as we got into old time music and bluegrass, we kept seeking out these elders who knew these old time songs and, you know, the traditional songs. And that's what we draw on as a band, is kind of reworking old traditionals or learning from those regional styles. And so there's that, right? And it's just amazing to think that, you know, these old songs are also just perfect kids songs too, because they're playful, they're upbeat a lot of times, they're great to dance to. What I see with folk music, especially when we go into schools, is maybe some kids, you know, at first they hear this banjo music or something, they think, oh, this is old grandpa music. But what happens is you start realizing that this rhythm, that these words, they appeal to grandparents, parents, teenagers, kids. And that's what's awesome about folk music, which is music of the people, is it's not a corporate marketing scheme to you know, identify a certain age group to like sell to them. No, it's for everybody. It's for the whole community to come together and sing and dance. And we try to really make it all ages music.
And I'm glad that you brought up the intergenerational piece too, Steve, because it's so intriguing to me, right? That our system is pretty siloed in doing the complete opposite, right? I don't think anyone would describe our educational system as intergenerational. It's very chronological age groups, and that's it. And so I think we're missing quite a bit by not giving that experience to the kids, not only to learn from maybe older and wiser adults, but just from older and wiser peers. I think there's a piece missing there. So I love that you brought that up, Joe, and in the connection to your music, for sure.
Yeah, and not even older and wiser peers, but sometimes younger and wiser peers too. I watch my little guy interact with some of the younger neighbors here and how much he learns from getting to be, you know, a caretaker or a role model, or just gets to be silly again like a three-year-old does. And so I've really appreciated watching my kid get to interact throughout the grade levels at the little school he's at. And as they combine first and second and third and fourth, and they do a lot of like grade sharing where they'll have reading buddies and whatnot and three or four grades up. And yeah, that kind of stuff just really, really needs to happen more often. I don't remember a ton of that happening for me. I know schools are leaning into that more and more.
Yeah, no, it's necessary.
There's just something really beautiful about the patience and maybe even the struggle of what might go on in a 30-day adventure. I you know, our listeners would be pleased to know that you and Justin take these 30-day trips, which we know can't be all glory, and maybe is that the purpose? Why the 30 days, and what is the result of that level of you investing that time in a songwriting and just an experience?
The reason why we do it is, one, we try to unplug as much as we can out there. We're not getting back to emails and stuff. And the point is to slow down and to connect in a different way, right? To get into a different timeline. And, you know, we see this with kids, is when we get to go into another realm in nature, a lot of times you can start breathing differently, your anxiety lowers, and you can start paying attention to things at a different level. You start noticing the little things, and these little things are what inspires the songs. You try to get out there with a mind that's going a million miles a minute and writing the next big song about some big thing, and it doesn't really happen. It starts by noticing little nuances in nature, how a plant grows, the way the rain smells, you know, what the wind is whispering in your ear. And these lead to songs. And we might talk in the education circles about like regulating anxiety or processing, you know, trauma and shame and whatnot. And nature has such a medicine out there with how to ground us and bring ourselves to a whole nother level that our brain can open up to creativity and making connections. How does that work? Well, we're a part of a giant superorganism that's making interconnections through the breeze, through the trees, through the mycelium and the roots. And when you plug into that system, you're no longer just drawing from what's inside your brain. Your mind becomes what's around you. and you write things you never would have thought were in your brain, because really they're not, they're coming from another place. And you're becoming kind of an instrument where this energy is flowing through you. And, you know, it might sound a little hippy dippy to some people to hear that, but I firmly believe it because I've experienced it. And I look at what a song I wrote or something, and I'd say, I didn't really write that. You know, what was going on there? Well, the interconnection inspired that and just flowed through. And so if kids can get an experience like that, or parents or teachers for that matter, I mean, that what more kind of education do you need other than to plug into the great mystery and beauty around you?
It seems like that process, in a lot of ways, even though you've done it numerous times and you'll continue to do it, there's like an unlearning process for the first couple of days of allowing yourself, you know, how do I unlearn so that I can learn again? And it's just really beautiful how that connects. And I would also venture to say that if I think about most traditional classrooms, and even for myself as a student, developing environments that really kind of promote the sense of being patient is not maybe how I would typically describe our schools, because they're typically go, 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 go. And at the same time, teaching the tolerance of struggles. That's a skill, to tolerate struggles. And so by you doing these adventures, it seems like you're unlearning how to learn again in a very creative manner.
Well, yeah, I'd like to just riff on that one for a while, because it's exactly right that some school structures are about, you know, filling us up, teaching us, progressing, learning, ascending into a higher realm of knowledge and acquiring more and more information. Whereas sometimes in more ancient models of connecting and what you would call more like, yeah, nature-based knowledge or channeling some sort of intelligence beyond just what your brain is capable of, the process isn't about filling up, it's about emptying out. It's the same as what you're calling unlearning. So it's shedding the ego and the tendencies to want to control things and label things and make things about the ego and this thing that I, my agenda. It's about emptying out and letting things pass through. And I just don't know if our education system would ever subscribe to something like that. Why would you want to empty out? You know, they'd say, don't you want to acquire things and gain knowledge? Why empty out? And it's like, well, get out of our own way and let some things come through. Of course, your personality and your style is going to come out through what you do. But I don't think we ever really talk about that exchange.
A word came up to me, and I'm sure you've heard it, kenosis.
No, I've never heard that word. Well, maybe I have, but tell me more.
It is the word that you just described so aptly. It's self-emptying. But we don't allow that in schools very much. We don't allow what Jessica very wisely said, the unlearning in order to learn. I feel like we haven't allowed nature to do that for us. And I mean, I love your connectedness to the kind of the universal good that's out there that nature delivers every day is underused. So underused. It's so regulatory. It's so good for kids. And they're so full of stuff, they need to empty out and then be filled with community, which I think was your first, you know, theme word at the start of our talk. So yeah, that meant a lot to me.
Well, that's beautiful. Kenosis. Yeah. I mean, right. We're going through an age of there's never been a time where kids know as many facts and little pieces of information. I mean, it's unbelievable what kids know these days. My kid blows me away. It's like whatever he's talking about in kindergarten is way more than I knew in like sixth grade. You know, I'm like, wow, okay, so you got some of that down. But how about this other side of things, right? Where I'm a big like storyteller guy and love myths. And for some reason, I always go back to the King Arthur myth of Wart, you know, King Arthur, when he's a boy and he's out in the woods and And Merlin is taking him through his education, basically, to become the once and future king, is to empty out, in a sense, and shapeshift and become the different animals in the forest. I don't know if you know that part of the story. He gets to, you know, empathize from all different perspectives by being the spider and the snake and the bear and the bird and the squirrels, and see what it feels like to be hunted and see what it feels like to hunt. And anyway, it's a great archetype and a pattern for understanding that it's not just about you and your perspective and gaining more and more knowledge as from your perspective, but yeah, being open to changing, shifting, seeing what it's like from somebody else's standpoint. And that comes from flexibility, that comes from looking at the ego and trying to see its limitations and how we can work around that kind of stuff. So,
but I do think there's a difference between just knowing things versus knowing how to be a learner. And so that was coming up for me, right? When you said, like, what would happen if we actually encouraged emptying out in schools with our students? I think we'd be probably faced with a position, which has come up before, even when we interviewed an amazing author and teacher, Zaretta Hammond, who also has pointed out, right? Like, are we actually creating students that know how to obtain their own knowledge, who know how to be a true learner? Many would argue that we've actually pushed pretty far away from that in regards to how we just give them the content that we deem they need to have, which kind of was coming up for me when you were saying, yeah, my son knows all these facts, which is great. But in so many ways, there's things that we could probably do better at as a system in promoting one's true ability to acquire knowledge.
That's right. So our true ability to acquire knowledge and our own instincts out there for how we can navigate that. And then even one step further is how we trust our own self, that there is an innate knowledge within us too, that I think is coming at this unlearning for me, where I'm like, oh, I'm so used to turning to a book, the internet, somebody else's opinion to make a decision or to know something, right? And where's the knowledge of taking a deep breath, meditating for a while, and listening to the inner wisdom, the inner intelligence? Of course, we don't want to necessarily promote that that's the only place you find knowledge. Of course, it's in community and it is in the external world, but there is a deep wisdom in all of us, right? And if we keep showing kids that the only way to get knowledge is external, there's just another side to that story, to trust themselves and to listen to what's inside of them. You know, I have a song, The Healing's in You. It's Dr. Mole in Brambletown, the new album. And not only is the healing in you, but yeah, the wisdom's in you too. You know, develop that relationship with yourself, because you're the person you're going to walk the rest of your life with. So might as well get to know yourself.
Yeah. And you do promote that, and you just said it, right? The process of slowing down, of unplugging, is very powerful. And even in education, like, we're very aware of our own ability to consolidate our experiences, to consolidate what we're learning happens when we reflect, happens when we step away and are just given that space. And so it all comes full circle.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, it almost seems like our kids feel empty because they're too full.
Interesting.
It's a weird way to say it, but it's what's popping into my head as the three of us are talking is, unless we give opportunity for space and quiet and all the things, I think that the way nature speaks in a much quieter way, I think we miss out on that kind of filling rather than fact filling or whatever else we're trying to do. I just want to bounce to the idea then of taking those experiences and having them lead to songwriting, which I think is a fabulous part of your life, but also should be a more of a part of other kids' lives as well. Can you talk to us a little bit more about how that has led to songwriting and how that might actually be shown or taught for in education, that kind of expression is done more often?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, what I'll say about that, not only, you know, is there the aspect that we've touched on briefly about, you know, inspiration coming through by emptying out and kind of letting maybe an idea that's floating around the wind kind of pass through. There's that kind of metaphysical understanding of it. Then there's just the craft of it, right? Of attention to detail and keeping track of little beautiful things, whether that's observations or think, you know, images from nature that really light you up and say, wow, that's really special. There's an energy there. And I wonder if this word and this word tied together could evoke that same kind of electricity in somebody else if they hear it. There's kind of an awareness of those types of things, keeping track of the types of words or things that resonate with you. And then, you know, stringing them together to tell a story about, you know, who you are and what you believe in. And there's so much in songwriting that happens by just personal development, curiosity, books you're reading, friends you have, the conversations you have, you know, all of this stuff ends up finding its way into songs. So it's not just the craft of writing the songs and rhyming and syllables and stuff, although those are really important too. But one of the things I will say is I don't think I've ever written a song by myself, you know. I think it's a communal activity. And I think it's always something I run by my wife and kid and Justin. And I give room to have feedback and change some things here and there, not be too attached to it, not think that, you know, exactly what's coming through at any given time needs to be there forever. I'm pretty, you know, loose with some of that stuff. And I think that that helps. That's my approach. Some people have different approaches, but I like thinking that it's communal because everything is connected out there and benefits from an interconnection. And I think art is the same way. So maybe for kids, you know, and students, maybe an activity would be like, yeah, co-songwriting, you know, you write a line, I write a line, we shift things together. Sometimes that's super frustrating, you know, because you can get defensive, you can get feedback that makes you feel bad or something like that. But then you need to practice what's a healthy way to give feedback, right? Constructive and not in a way that says, oh, that line's stupid, we got to change that. Like, oh, well, we got to learn how to speak to one another first. So it brings up a lot, right? It brings up so much learning, how to be creative together, how to hold each other in moments that are vulnerable, where you're saying, here's an idea I have, I really love it. What do you think? That's a really vulnerable act. And to do that with my best friend and to do that with somebody that both of us have given like probably improper feedback many times too and been burnt here and there, but we still show up and we say, all right, what do you think about this one? That's like, yeah, it's hard, but it's a good skill to have.
And I think it does fit a little bit, Joe, because there is kind of this push, not everywhere, but you know, some people call it project-based learning. Everyone puts a little fancy title on it, but essentially kind of moving more towards educational activities that promote community, that promote interaction with your peers to create something. And so I think that's what was coming up for me of, it's just a gentle reminder for all of us in school that nothing is done individually. And to have the skill to be able to recognize that my ability to work with someone is a massive skill to have. And so that's what was coming up when you were talking about writing songs together or something like that.
Absolutely. And even if you're not going to become a co-songwriter when you grow up, you are going to be in a relationship with somebody, whether that's a life partner or a neighbor or a kid or a business associate, you know, colleague or somebody. And these things, these skills are important to know. And there's a myth of the singular genius. You know, I was just reading a book recently with Justin called The Power of Twos or something like that, where it went in and debunked all these like solo people we think are just geniuses by themselves. And it's like, nope, they had people in their lives that they were running this stuff by. And then using all the great examples of like, you know, Paul McCartney and John Lennon and the list goes on of just different collaborators who had to learn how to collaborate, but also compromise and meet each other halfway. And those are just like, wow, I guess people call them soft skills, but they're the hardest skills of all.
Yeah, I actually had a high school classmate wrote a book on the soft skills. And he's well acquainted with the captains of industry and tech world. And he said, everybody's crying. They're not crying out for kids who do math better. They're not crying out for better readers. They're crying out for just exactly the kind of person you described. Someone who has the soft skills, someone who can work in community, like Jessica just mentioned. That's what the new wave is asking for. And we're a little bit behind in schools with our, you know, rather individualistic approach. I think it's changing. I think it's evolving. I hope it is. But we're finding that in a couple words that we put together, especially for kids who have grown up in tough circumstances and have grown up not connected well, don't have a positive attachment experience in their earliest days of life. Mm-hmm. These kind of activities that you're promoting promote what I would call active attachment. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing things together and we're feeling attached to other humans in a more healthy way than we've ever been. That's a beautiful thing you guys are promoting. It's mm-hmm. that active attachment, and we need that in school so much. I don't know, Jessica, we talk about that a lot.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot, but I think even in just in the context with we at this point as a podcast sound like a broken record, but right, just the reality of the power of rhythm to do that, the power, whether it is through music, whether it is through poetry, whether it is through dance, like the power of rhythm to heal, to mend, to strengthen that active attachment is just so powerful. It's a double whammy what you're doing, right? You're doing it in more ways and you're probably aware.
Well, what you guys are talking about is so important. And even as an adult, when I get into the situations where I struggle to be vulnerable and to soften, like even in my relationship with my wife or parenting happen, frustrating situations, my little kid, it all comes back to those childhood memories of, you know, did I have the space to feel my feelings, whether that was in school or with my parents? And did I get that connection between what I was feeling and my body and taking breaths and reaching the needs that I needed, which was sometimes going slow, feeling the things, feeling held and safe in order to process those feelings rather than, okay, time's up. We got to go. No time for this expression of feeling. You know, if that happens to you time and time and time and time again, later on in life, it's going to be hard for you to access that softness that is required to navigate those hard, vulnerable situations and relationships.
Yeah. Well, and it's a softness that's required to learn. Again, curious can be really scary. And so if you don't know how to be soft and kind of gentle and kind to yourself, it's going to be very hard to be curious.
That's right. Because you might sound what some people think sounds naive or uneducated to ask a question in a certain way. And it's like, oh, you don't know that? Wow. And it's like, well, I was just being curious, you know?
Yeah.
And so we have to create these safe environments to ask questions. And I do remember as a kid asking questions that other people laughed at, you know? Like, why don't you know that? Like, well, yeah, I don't know. Just curious. And we're all learning at different places. So important to create that environment where you feel like you can, you're right, be radically, vulnerably curious.
You brought up the word curious. So now I'm curious about the process. We've talked about some heavy ideas and some big ideas, but then you guys take some of those ideas and add the music to it and the harmony to it. So those are two things I just, if we have a few minutes to explore, how did you choose, first of all, the style of music that you typically do, or maybe not typically do, I don't know. And then tell us about the magic of harmony. I think it's one of the most magical, wonderful experiences in life to sing in harmony. Can you bounce off of that a little bit?
Yeah, well, we started off just playing in kind of a folky bluegrass band in high school and college, and we did that for a little while, little tours and stuff. And what we noticed was, well, first of all, we're not like great instrumentalists when we're super proficient on our, you know, on the fretboard or whatnot. So we also just knew that kind of these old traditional songs and singing and songwriting was going to be the thing that the direction in which we were going to really focus. And folk music, kind of old timey music, I guess it just lent itself to the way we wrote, the way we sang, and also super danceable for family friendly events too. So that's how we ended up with folk music, not to mention some of our heroes, both socially and politically, I guess you'd say. I don't even know, you know, how much that even applies to the word political that we understand today, but we're movers and shakers from the folk music world, you know, Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie and Ella Jenkins. And so it's also just an inspirational from that standpoint. And as for harmony, you know, it just turned out that Justin and I could both sing. And when a chorus comes along, you both want to sing it, right? And I remember the first time we wrote a song together, it's called In the Mountains, and it was up in the mountains. It was a very literal song. And we were singing the melody together of the chorus, and I decided to sing up a little bit, you know, a little higher. And I didn't even know that was what harmony was, but it felt so good to sing a different note, and they sounded good together. And then before you knew it, you know, we were just in love with it too. Then we found out really what it was and how you could figure it out by listening to the chord you were on and choosing a different note and then learning little harmony parts. It has become one of my favorite things to do too. I actually go to little singing groups around the cities and around the Midwest to just stand in a group of people and hear harmonies. I was in choir in college, and I guess what I'll say about it is it really is the perfect metaphor for community and collaboration, because you're not only just, you know, 50% better with an added person, but you're three times better somehow with an added harmony. It just has a magic to it that the resonance creates a whole nother kind of depth to the sound. And I guess that's all I have to say on harmony, but I could do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful way to kind of to end our time together. And I don't know why, I probably shouldn't say this, but the whole time I was thinking when you were sharing that story of, like, you know, you and Justin were singing and you decided to go up an octave, and I'm like, God, that could have gone south real quick if they realized one of them was not good at this. I don't know why that came
right.
to me.
That's right. Yeah, it could have been a disaster. But no, not
it worked out great.
You know, this is just the thing. And I would want this to be part of that point that I was just making about harmonies, that kids today might I know for a fact it just doesn't seem like we're singing as much in schools as we used to, and kids might be scared or nervous to put themselves out there and sing out a melody, let alone a harmony. But you know, to me, there's kind of like an idealistic dream to hear school kids singing out and singing in harmony together and breathing all in pace with one another. I just think, you know, there can be such amazing regulation going on and connection going on if that was a practice we had in our schools, because the music teaches you something deep in your bones that your brain doesn't even understand that we all need to remember who we are and how to find our way back to one another.
Amen. Amen. I couldn't have said it better. And it's, yeah, with music, there's a place for everybody. And so that was really well said. It's like, you know how to make beautiful words.
Hey, thanks for a good conversation, guys. This was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Add to that.
what a rich topic to delve into. So thanks for being so open to some of the more out there things. It just seems like you guys are right on the same page. So that was cool.
We're on the same page, and we can't thank you enough for your time. Please give Justin our best wishes. It's been a true honor, and I'm sure you hear this message a lot, but as an educator, as a parent, as a listener, your music is changing the world, and I really hope you know that.
That means a lot. Thank you so much. What you guys are doing is ultra important too. So keep having the conversations and inspiring those educators out there.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, good to see you guys.
Hey everyone, I'm KJ Royalty, the Lindbergh Senior High student intern who edited this episode. Education Suspended is a production of Intricate Roots Educational Consulting Services. Our producer is Jessica Pfeiffer. Our Educational Suspended website is created by Grainer Media. Our production manager is Gina Hansen, and our music provided by Poets Row.
Kind and curious.